Nora Jones, Come Away With Me, and Gavin Steinhobel, attorney at law from Kloppers Inc., has joined us for another chat on a Wednesday. I suppose it's fair to say, Gavin, that I anticipate the Wednesday conversation with you, generally speaking, with great alacrity, because I never know where it's going to go.
Where we going?
And what will be the consequence? But it's always an interesting free-flow conversation.
I must say, with everything going on at the moment, it's just we're living in fascinating times, whether it be on the international front or on the local front. You know, you just feel like there's enormous winds of change that are sweeping through, you know, our international politics, our local politics, and it's fascinating to watch. I've been watching everybody falling about now after this budget. It's obvious we've run out of money. You know, a lot of people still hold the view that the only reason the apartheid ended was because the government of the day ran out of money.
I think that might be,
and
I think it's true.
And maybe the stranglehold that the ANC has had on this country for almost 31 years, and all the corruption we've had to suffer, and all the incompetence we've had to live under, will also be coming to an end. I see what always happens. I remember Carl Jung, I think it was Carl Jung, who said, you know, if you decide and you've identified that there's somebody to blame for all your troubles and misfortunes, and it's always that person's fault, you must remember that you are always right about that, but you're wrong about who it is. The person is always yourself. Mm. And, you know, I see now it's white bashing season again in politics, you know, the old scapegoat. You know, if you guys... if it wasn't for you chaps, we'd all anyway have had technological prosperity and economic growth, and you know, it's still there. And then nobody's looking at, you know, the real story, and the real problem is that for, you know, 31 years of controlling all the taxes that are raised, and the opportunity that was squandered, they went rather for corruption and incompetence and cadre deployment. I remember as a young man, just after 94, going, wow, you know, this is just feels wonderful. I mean, we all felt wonderful. We were, you know, we all lived under this burden that we were the pariahs of the world and we were doing a bad thing. I say we were doing a bad thing. Obviously, not everybody voted for the National Party, but we lived under a bad system and we all felt lousy about it. And you weren't proud to be a South African in those days. And suddenly, you know, the heavens opened and the sun shone through the dark clouds. And
the rainbow rose.
Yes, the rainbow nation came into play.
And we won the rugby and we won the soccer and we won everything.
I think there wasn't a South African that wasn't at the time optimistic and said, you know, this unfair system is now gone. Mm. This massive disparity between the haves and the have-nots, we can start working at that and chipping away at it and making the country more equal and more prosperous, because it is a great country and it deserves to be prosperous, and it has a lot of mineral wealth, but it also has a lot of human wealth in terms of wonderful people that live here. And we noticed very shortly afterwards that we were going to one of our first big moves on the international stage, is we were going to blow 30 million rand on military hardware.
Oh yes.
And everybody looked at the time and thought, well why? We're the darlings of the world. We're not going to fight with anybody. We're not at war with anybody. And the point is, you know, the arms manufacturers came to town and they said, listen, chaps, you guys are in charge now, and we've got some wonderful ideas. You know, buy a submarine. It'll employ 400 people and so forth and so forth. And then it became... you started to think. I thought, as a young man, I thought, you know, well, how is this going to help South Africans? You know, how are we going to close this gap, and how are we going to give the poor a chance of coming out of poverty? You know, there's only been one machine that's ever reliably ended poverty, and that's the free market. But that's another conversation. And you thought, well, why would they do this? I mean, and then we discovered when Andrew Feinstein wrote his book, well, they didn't do it for South Africa or for the poor of South Africa. They purely did it because they were grafters and carpetbaggers.
Who was that famous political voice that said, I didn't join the struggle to be poor?
To be poor, of course, of course. And I mean, you've got some sympathy with that sentiment, but it doesn't make it right. So, you know, it is just a case of that has continued, you know. that has continued, and that spirit of self-enrichment has continued, you know. And the last people on anybody's mind are the poor, and the last concern of any ANC politician is the welfare of this country.
Yeah.
And so what I'm trying to say is, I can see now with Thuli Madonsela, with her message to white people and so forth, I can see we're becoming very polarized again, because, you know, if someone's responsible for all your misfortune, you know, it can't be you. And so, you know, and I'm surprised she's come out as a shill for the ANC, because to be honest with you, I really admired her as a public protector. I thought she was brilliant and she was courageous. I think she's kind of been swept under this sort of social justice idea, which is found disfavor internationally, because it's actually just a ruse. In fact, if you have to add any prefix or suffix to the word justice, justice stands on its own. It doesn't need social in front of it. The minute it's social, it's always at the cost of some other group, you know. That's what we're dealing with here. I mean, we've got a tiny minority of people in this country are now white. Most have left, you know. And we're sitting with a real problem. And there are people that are complaining, and they are going abroad and saying, "Listen, this is unfair. You know, this is wrong. What's happening in this country is a tragedy, and it must stop."
Does anyone ever turn a spotlight on the politicians and the sort of oligarch politicians, of which there are many in our country now? I think Cyril Ramaphosa is a dollar billionaire. I might be wrong, but certainly he is a rand billionaire.
I'd be surprised if he wasn't.
You know, and this is an interest. No one turns to them and says, "Well, how did you do this?"
Yeah,
you know, show us the endeavor. Well,
he's got the magic, the goose that lays the golden egg, the magic sofa.
Well, there we go. But maybe we should move on to because there's been a bit of a call for us to talk.
Well, what I did want to say, I did listen to somebody recently, and he said he was quoting Churchill, who said, "Never let a good crisis go to waste." And you know, this is a perfect time for us to have this examination and to talk about these things and to think and to air them openly. I mean, I've heard some horrendously racist things and seen them in social media and so on, and I'm going, well, good, you know, well, let it get out, you know, let's get this conversation on with and over with, and let's look at what's in the interest of this country for a change.
And on that note, let's just take a look at an interesting development in the news today. Top South African private school could lose its land. Now, we've alluded to this, it's in the news. Hilton College, one of South Africa's most respected and exclusive private schools, could lose its land following a land claim. Now, it was established in 1872, this school, and was subject to a land claim in 2005, by all accounts. February 2005, the Land Court of South Africa's Judge M.T. Ngube set aside the decision by the KZN Regional Land Claims Commissioner. The land claim is over two decades old. It was brought by Inkosi Sikholwa Zuma and rejected after the regional commissioner deemed it frivolous and vexatious. Why would anything change now? And it seems like it has changed.
Well, I think the headline there is a bit misleading and sensationalist. I don't think there's any chance of the school losing its land. You know, under the Land Reform Act, people who were previously dispossessed of their land forcibly under racially based legislation were entitled to go back and say, "Listen, we were here. This was our land. We were kicked off." And the process was, you approach the landowner, you say, "Well, you've got this land claim now. What is your land worth?" They'd sit down and they say, "Well, the land is worth X, Y, Z." All right, that's fine. And then the claimant could either take the money or the land. In fact, I think there's even a discretion where if it doesn't make sense to take the land, for example, the school, it'll be a cash settlement paid by government, not by Hilton College. So what's evidently happened here is this land claim was instituted within the period, because that period's long gone now. You can't, there's no dispensation for fresh land claims. And so that claim was rejected by the commissioner at the time, because the commissioner obviously was of the view that it was a frivolous claim. Frivolous and vexatious simply means there's no prima facie case. You can't actually look at the facts and even dream that they can succeed. And I mean, if you've got a land that was acquired in 1872, long before, for example, the South African Union and the race laws that followed that, then it stands to reason that you think, well, it's unlikely that this was that this qualifies under the Act for land redistribution. So it's obvious that he's pursued it, and obviously he said, well, that was an unreasonable call. Well, now it just goes back to the commissioner, who has to look at it again and say, well, just make sure you were right about this, because you might have been wrong kicking this man's clam out, and let's have a good look at it. And you know what? Why not? Have a good look at it. It's it's exactly why the Act exists. And that was the beauty of that system, was that you were taking taxpayer money and you were acquiring land and giving it back to the people who originally were forcibly removed from that land. Remember that a lot of white people were also forcibly removed from land. I know a lot of farmers, for example, in the Newcastle area were made to sell up in places like Yugi and surrounds, because that became the Transkei, and it wasn't for them, and their land was acquired and then amalgamated into the Transkei. They didn't have a choice. They couldn't stay on their farms. They had to move. So there was a massive social engineering project that went on, and people were moved around. And you know, we had the Bantustan, you know, areas, Transkei, Bophuthatswana, Venda, Siskai. And the argument at the time was, well, you know, you must preserve something for Africans, because otherwise, you know, one of the arguments was otherwise rich white developers are going to develop all this land and they're going to have nowhere to go. You know, there's always a sort of facetious arguments you get when you're doing race-based stuff. It never really makes sense, you know. It's more an ideology and an ideological decision than anything rooted in any kind of common sense.
Mm.
And we're having that argument in South Africa now. You know, there's a big argument going on as to whether the 133 race-based laws should exist in a democracy like ours. You know, at common law, there's no race. Common law recognizes a man and a woman and a child. And the reason is because we've always understood that the color of one's skin is a circumstance of your birth over which you've got no control. So if you're going to start sorting people along the circumstances of their birth and the skin color that they happen to have by the lottery of life and genes, then that would be iniquitous. Well, of course, wherever it's been tried, race-based legislation has always led to inequity and unfairness, and it is nowhere acceptable. And you know, we're still doing it, and we've probably got more race-based laws in the moment in this raft of BEE legislation than what we had previously. And I've made this point before, because I've got a son who's just gone to varsity, and he wasn't even born during apartheid. In fact, he was born 12 years after the end of apartheid. So, you know, there you have it. And I mean, to now go, well, you've got the same skin tone as Hendrik Verwoerd, therefore you must, you're not eligible or as eligible as some people to go to UCT, for argument's sake, or whatever, when he works like I have. I've only worked after 1994. That was the beginning of my working life, and I've worked under BEE legislation my entire life. You know, so at some stage you have to say, look, are we going to be a racially divided country or not? And if we're not going to be, then there's no place for racist legislation. And, you know, we really need to look at what the real problems are, the systemic problems we have in this country. Well, you know, there was a great time of goodwill where we looked at the liberating ANC and we gave them a free pass on a lot of things that were coming out that we'd rather not have known about. Well, that just made them more brazen. And the problem has become endemic and entrenched in from municipal level through provincial level through national level. How you clean that up, whether you can clean it up, I don't know. I think the only thing that can happen is massive change. And massive change did just happen, and things seem gloomy now, but we forget massive change just happened. You know, the ANC lost their majority. They're in a government of national unity. I think the budget thing was a debacle, but it was also an indication that the ANC can't just do what they like anymore. And so I think it's going to be a difficult time, but I think, like, after all of these pressure points in South African history, eventually the pimple bursts and we move on into a different future. And I can feel it coming. I really do. And I think the mood globally has also changed. You know, there's a movement away from all these idiotic ideologies and a movement back towards common sense. What works? How do we do business? You know, business is what we want to do. We want to make money. We want to make goods, services. We want to grow our economy. We have to grow our economy. The conversation that you never hear from the ANC is how are we going to grow the economy. It's always how are we going to take things from this lot and give it to that lot. Well, you know, Churchill said, you know, a country that tries to tax itself into prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket and trying to lift himself by the handle. And, you know, this idea of increasing VAT or increasing this tax or adding 3% to company tax for some black fund, well, all of that is just pulling at the handle. You know, it doesn't create anything. We need to create things. We need to create an economy. We need to grow the economy. We can't grow the economy at just over 1% when the population is growing much faster than that. You know, we're just going to create more unemployed people, and so these are things that these are conversations, and the ANC is very lucky at the moment, really, if you think about it, because finally they can actually do the right thing for the country, and not just for their party, because they can do it under cover of, well, we can't just do what we like anymore. We kind of have partners in this, and we have to appease them as well, and so forth. So there is a big opportunity here for change. And I got a feeling the money's running out like it did for the Nats, and things have to change. Now, we have to spend less. Obviously, that conversation will never be had by the ANC because they've got all their spiderweb of patronage throughout all government institutions, and you can't start getting rid of your colleagues and cadres and comrades because you know that's gonna negatively affect your party. So these are all things. That the conversations that are not being had that have to be had. So we'll see. I mean, it's a good time to be a South African. It's frightening as always. We're always on a roller coaster. But you know, just the possibility of change is always so alluring.
Well, there's a good point to pause the conversation until next week when we catch up again with Gavin Steinhobel, attorney at law. Always, as I say, an interesting hard look at the reality of where we are in time and space, and I look forward to catching up with you, Gavin. We do in a week's time, and if you're looking for a good attorney, well, you know where to find him, down in the Bolito Village at Kloppers Inc., Gavin Steinhobel. This will be up as a podcast shortly, so you can listen to it again and possibly share it with your nearest and dearest, because that's how radio works these days. You catch it live or you don't, and you can catch it again on demand. We would expect nothing less. The Morning Show.